Blog Talk Radio.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Mr. Speaker, here's the latest reality game. Let's play Wall Street bailout. Rule one, rush the decision. Time the game to fall in the week before Congress is set to adjourn and just 6 weeks before an historic election so your opponents will be preoccupied, pressured, distracted, and in a hurry. Rule two, disarm the public through fear. Warn that the entire global financial system will collapse and the world will fall into another Great Depression. Control the media enough to ensure that the public will not notice that this bailout will indebt them for generations, taking them from trillions of dollars, taking from them trillions of dollars they earned and deserve to keep. Rule three, control the playing field and set the rules. Hide from the public and most of the Congress just who is arranging this deal. Communicate with the public through leaks to media insiders. Limit any open congressional hearings. Communicate with Congress via private teleconferencing calls. Heighten political anxiety by contacting each political party separately. Treat members of Congress condescendingly, telling them that the matter is so complex that they must rely on those few insiders who really do know what's going on. Rule four, divert attention and keep people confused. Manage the news cycle so Congress and the public have no time to examine who destroyed the prudent banking system that served America so well for 60 years after the financial meltdown of the 1920s. Rule 5. Always keep in mind the goal is to privatize gains to a few and socialize losses to the many. For 30 years in one financial scandal after another, Wall Street game masters have kept billions of dollars of their gains and shifted their losses to American taxpayers. Once this bailout is in place, the greed game will begin again. But I have a counter game. It's called Wall Street Reckoning. Congress shouldn't go home to campaign. It should put America's accounts in order. To Wall Street insiders, it says no on behalf of the American people. You have perpetrated the greatest financial crime ever on this American republic. You think you can get by with it because you are extraordinarily wealthy and the largest contributors to both presidential and congressional campaigns in both major parties. But you are about to be brought under firm control. First, America doesn't need to bail you out. It needs to secure the real assets and property, not your paper. That means the homes and properties of hardworking Americans who are about to lose their homes because of your mortgage greed. There should be a new job for regional Federal Reserve banks. We want no home foreclosed if a serious workout agreement can be put into place. And if you don't do it, we want a notarized statement by a Federal Reserve official that they tried and failed. Second, taxpayers should directly gain any equity benefits that may flow from this historic bailout. We want the American people to get first priority in taking ownership of the institutions that want to pass their toxic paper on to the taxpayers. Third, before any bailout for Wall Street, America needs major job creation to rebuild our national infrastructure. America needs assets, not paper. We need working assets. Fourth, the time for real financial regulatory change is now, not next year. A modernized Glass-Steagall Act must be put in place. We need to reestablish locally owned community savings banks across this country and create within the Justice Department a fully funded unit to prosecute every single high-flying thief whose fraud and criminal acts created this debacle and then forced their disgorgement of assets going back 15 years. Fifth, any refinancing must return a major share of profits to a new Social Security and Medicare lockbox where the monies can go to pay for a dignified and assured retirement for every American. This member isn't voting for a penny of it. Those who created and profited from this game of games must be brought to justice. The assets they stole must be returned to the American taxpayers right down to the tires on their Mercedes. Mr. Speaker, I ask my colleagues to join me in co-sponsoring my bill to create an independent commission to investigate these well-heeled wrongdoers. Real reform now or nothing.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. I want you to get up right now. Get up, go to your windows, open them, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Things have got to change.
How many stations does this go out?
You've got to get mad. You've got to say,
I know it was to Louisville and Atlanta.
We're not going to take this anymore. Then we'll figure out what to do about the depression and the inflation and the oil crisis. But first, get up out of your chair, open the window, stick your head out and yell, and say, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
All right, everybody, it's Monday night, and of course that means time for the Constitution Hour. And after that intro, I don't know if I've got anything left to say. I think that sums up the way a good majority of the people in this country truly feel. You know, I kind of put that together a while back, merged a couple of clips that I got off of YouTube. And the lady that was speaking, believe it or not, is a Democrat, but nonetheless, she got a lot of it right. She got quite a bit of it right. I think where she may have erred is where she speaks of the wonderful banking system that had served America so greatly for so many decades. She fails to realize that it is that system that is the fundamental problem. It's that system that created this current debacle and the one in the Great Depression. But nonetheless, she had it right that, you know, at some point, there has to be a way to hold these people accountable. And that just doesn't seem to be in the cards for average Joe here in the United States of America. And it's one of the reasons why I so despise paying taxes. And it's not just any tax that I despise paying. It's the income tax in particular that I despise paying. On my earnings. Because it's outright theft. You know, I have my Constitution right here. I keep a pocket Constitution within reach at most all times. And I've read through, and I haven't committed the thing to memory by any stretch, but I do know that there are certain articles where power or authority is granted to Congress under the Constitution. And, you know, we see that they have the power to lay and collect taxes, and that power is for certain specific and enumerated purposes. And the main purpose is to pay the debts of the United States. And I would offer to you that we have roughly just north of 15 trillion reasons that we can point to as evidence that they have utterly failed in that obligation. And of course, I'm talking about our national debt. You know, we had this safeguard that it was the representatives of the people, the House of Representatives, our congressmen, that were to control the purse strings. And quite truly, if we want to hold accountable anyone, that is the first place whence we should start. That is where we should first begin weeding out all the thorns that have grown up in the wheat. And it's not difficult, because I think there is probably at this point a handful of that of decent congressmen in our House of Representatives. Too long, the measure of a congressman was how much money he brought back for his state, his constituents. But that alone should be the venue of the senators. But as we know, the 17th Amendment kind of put a wrench in that works, because the senators are now elected by popular vote, and they're not appointed or elected by their own state's electoral college. And we truly do have an upside-down mess. And, you know, I see, Linda and Doc, you're correct in that we'll never be able to pay off this mess. I agree. We can't grow ourselves out of it. And we can't print our way out of it. And I think, first and foremost, we should look to where this debt is created. Who was it created by, and for what purpose? You know, the debts of the United States are one thing. The various programs that are run by various administrations and agencies within our government, those are not debts. Those are things that can be offhand done away with entirely, until we reduce government to such size as we're able to service our debt. That's really what needs to happen. But the very first thing that needs to happen is we need to put a halt to the ability to continue expanding that debt at an exponential rate. And until that's addressed, none of the rest of it will matter. Not one jot, not one tittle. You can go in and eliminate every agency in the United States government, all of the alphabet gang, every one of them, totally cut them right out of the budget and put them on the streets. You still have not addressed the problem. You can get rid of the entire Congress and the president and elect all new people, shut down all the agencies. You still haven't addressed the problem. You can cut off all foreign spending, all foreign aid. You can cut off the United Nations. You can put an end to the IMF, the World Bank, and you still would not have solved or addressed the problem. unless and until we change our monetary system in this country, unless and until we have the will, and not only the will, but the audacity to demand that it be changed to end the Federal Reserve monetary scheme, you're not going to fix the problem. And I agree, the folks that are getting handouts, they're not going to vote to cut off their gravy train. And that includes the folks on Social Security. And I'm sorry, I know many of them paid into the system. They paid into a lie. They believed in a lie. And I don't fault those people. It was a good lie. It worked well for a while. But now we've kind of messed in our own nest, so to speak. Well, Doc, I think when we talk about the vote, as far as people being able to vote, when it comes to a presidential election, it doesn't matter because the people's vote doesn't elect the president. When it comes to the Senate vote and their congressman, I would have to agree with you on that. You know, the founders, of course, today, they're racist. And the only reason that they put that clause in there, most of the states that you had to be a property owner, was racially motivated, so blacks couldn't vote. But, of course, they understood the importance of the voting public actually having skin in the game, as Mr. Obama likes to put it. And I saw something today, sort of off topic, but not entirely. In Mesquite, Texas, the yearbook, they're all up in arms about it. Because there was a misprint, evidently, or at least that's what they're calling it, that allowed the yearbooks to go out with an explanation that some of the quote-unquote special needs children were mentally retarded. And, you know, I was going through some of the headlines for today to see what it was, if anything jumped out at me of interest to talk about this evening on the show. Because at this point, I feel like we're really just rehashing a lot of old ground that we've been over a million times, and it's just redundant. And I thought, you know, you don't have to go that far to really get a feeling for the state of our country. Not just our country, but our society, I should say. I don't like the word nation. We weren't meant to be a nation. It wasn't meant to be a national government. So I wanted to run down just some of the headlines. And, of course, you know, people outraged that the words mental retardation is in a school book, in a school yearbook. We have the headline, Illuminati targeting youth with sex and violence. Chicago police raid on Luke Radowski goes viral. Syrian girl, NATO secret agenda in Syria. Ron Paul storms to victory in Minnesota delegate race. AMC buyout, part of Chinese takeover of media. Police state law banning protest leads to violence in Montreal. NATO protest in Chicago. Police van drives into protesters. NATO decides to activate missile shields despite Russian threats. J.P. Morgan's potential trading loss just keeps spiraling higher. We've lost our sense of sanity. It's crazy. We're absolutely nuts. We can't even tell the truth. And the truth is, no matter how harsh some people may feel, is that some of those children with quote-unquote special needs are mentally retarded. Their mental development has been retarded for some reason or another. That should not be offensive to people. The truth should not be offensive. When we allow the truth to become offensive, we make room for an alternate truth, which is precisely what all this PC crap is all about. It's about having an alternate truth. It's about twisting the truth and reality to fit your agenda, which is precisely what has been done to the American people. So much so to the point that there are vast pockets in our society that actually believe this crap. They believe it. We recently discovered that much of the black community is willing to go along with just about anything that Obama does except support a gay marriage. That is a bridge too far. Thank God they have one. Thank God that we've found a bridge too far for that segment of our society. Why they continue to be... Well, I can't say that. I was going to say why they continue to be satisfied to be on the outside looking in is beyond me. But they're really not on the outside. They're on the inside looking out. And they're laughing at us because we're the ones paying for it. And I'm not trying to be racist. I'm just stating a fact. It really just gets me very wound up. And all in all, you know, we had actually a pretty slow news day today. Oh, they're still flapping about an economic collapse in Greece. And, you know, there's stupid little stories here and there. But for the most part, we don't have any real earth-shattering, you know, groundbreaking stories. We all got to listen to tribute to the Bee Gees this morning as we drove to work or sat around the house and had the TV or the radio on, you know, as Robin Gibb has passed away. And it seems that even the news media has run out of things to talk about. And, Doc, you bring up a point, and this is kind of an argument that's been going on for some time. And I've talked about Social Security in the past. I disagree with you. I know where your heart's at. I understand what you mean. But you can rest assured 100% that Social Security is, in fact, an entitlement program. Period. What makes it an entitlement program is that the taxes that are paid into the government, the federal government, you know, those ones that they highlight on your payroll stub as being for FICA, Medicare, Medicaid, there's this perception that money goes directly into some secret fund for just those programs. There was a perception at the outset of Social Security that that was the case. The truth is much different. And I have urged others to go read a Supreme Court case titled Helvring v. Davis. Helvring v. Davis was one of the first, what was the first major litigation under the Social Security Act that was passed by FDR. And if you read through that case, what you'll find is that the Supreme Court very correctly pointed out that irregardless of what the title of the bill was, it was not insurance. It was not anything other than a tax. I would like to see those file cabinets because the money once transferred to the trust, that money is used to fund the checks that go out of the trust, period. Congress appropriates the money. When they talk about Congress or government taking Social Security out of the lockbox, what they mean is they changed it from being an off-budget item to an on-budget item. That is, included in the budget. Well, that's great. 60 Minutes did an episode on it, and if it was on 60 Minutes, I'm sure it must be true. There again, the same could be said for the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court stated, plain and simple, that the Social Security Act was nothing but a tax. It was Congress exercising its taxing authority. Plain and simple. And no one, as a matter of fact, that there is no one out there that is entitled to Social Security benefits. No one in this country is entitled to Social Security benefits. By the law, what you're entitled to is you're entitled to apply to become eligible to receive benefits. And Congress has to re-up that every time they appropriate money. See, Congress cannot appropriate money for all of the Social Security recipients for next year because they don't know who they are and they don't know how many there will be. They can guess, so it has to be appropriated anew. But I think in the end, we're really arguing, splitting hairs over verbiage. Really not looking at the more important or bigger picture. Social Security in and of itself, even the concept of it, the very concept of Social Security is evil. It's like a tax refund, Rod. Why are they paying? I would ask you a better question. Rod said, if it was just a tax, then why are they paying out checks for paid-in taxes? They do that every year, number one, even on the income tax. As you well know, we're spending $40 billion sending money to illegals. But I would ask you, the better question is, why are they paying benefits to people who've never paid a penny and are not from this country? Why did our Social Security Administration open up a new office in Mexico City some years back? It is the concept, the idea of Social Security that is at odds with the idea of the United States of America and what this country was founded on. And the results are very plain to anyone who wants to be honest in looking at our situation. look at the number of elderly who are totally trapped and completely dependent on Social Security. They're stuck. And they're totally dependent on government. And those that are totally dependent on government for their subsistence, well, all you've got to do is come out and say, oh, they want to mess with Social Security. And boy, you got everybody, all the old blue hairs out there waving their umbrellas and their purses around, ready to whack somebody. It's used to manipulate the people. Plain and simple. And we're seeing it again in this current depression part due. We had Social Security for the banks. We had the 99ers on unemployment and various other government programs to hand money out to people who aren't putting anything back into the game. And I don't want to point the finger of blame at folks that are on Social Security. It's not their fault. They were suckered into a deal, were tricked into it. They believed in it. Now that they're living, they recognize that, yeah, it's not near what it was promised to be, number one. And number two, it's hardly a way to live. I just find it distressing. And there is a lot of misinformation about the program. But I'm pretty certain that the court had it right. They could be wrong. All of us are, of course, human and not infallible. Nonetheless, here we sit, stuck in the socialist utopia, as Mr. Rod Luke so well puts it, that was designed for us. So, in that vein, it's working perfectly. It's working exactly as it was designed. And it's very frustrating. It's frustrating to see it. It's frustrating to be caught up in it. And it's frustrating to see the decay of it. And it's really just sad, quite honestly. There's no other way to put it. It's sad that these other people are stuck. There's no jobs out there to speak of. I mean, there are some. But we have whole generations of countries, whole generations of citizens from this country that, quite simply, don't have any marketable skills other than being a good thief. And they were raised in a system where everything was given from government. And so, of course, they've come to rely on that government. And I think it's inhumane to simply just rip it away from them and tell them, shame on you, you should have known better all along. You should have known better. I don't know. I know I don't have all the answers. I know I don't have many answers at all, to be quite honest with you. And that's why I played that clip. You got to get mad. Because it seems like about all we have left. But before we go on, I'm going to play you guys another song. Just to take a little bit of a break, get a glass of iced tea, and I'll be back just a moment. So sit back and enjoy a little of my one of my all-time favorites.
I wish a buck was still silver And it was back when the country was strong. Back before Elvis, before the Vietnam War came along. Before the Beatles and yesterday, when a man could still work and still would. It's the best of free life behind us now. The good time's really over for good. I wish Coke was still cola, and the joint was a bad place to be. It was back before Nixon lied to us all on TV. Before microwave ovens, when a girl could still cook and still would. The best of free life behind us now. The good time's really over for good. I've been rolling downhill like a snowball headed for hell. With no kind of chance for the flag or the liberty. I wish Ford and Chevy would still last 10 years like they should.
All right.
The best of the free life behind us now. The good time's really over for good. Stop rolling downhill. Make a Ford and a Chevy that would still last 10 years like they should. 'Cause the best of the free life is still yet to come. The good times ain't over for good.
All right, guys, sorry I just had to play that one. Just kind of mood I'm in right now. And, you know, Rod and Doc, you know, you guys talking about the trust fund and Social Security. There is a fund, a trust, from which Social Security checks are written. And there's no doubt that Congress well could have overfunded that trust and then taken money back out of it. So I don't doubt that at all. I don't doubt that that is accurate and true. I guess part of the point I'm trying to make with where we're going, and so often we get angry at the things that our government does in our name, or in spite of us. And we see people that are the beneficiaries of the largesse of government, while many of us feel that we're the victims. We're the ones that have been suckered, you know? We're the ones that have been working 60, 70, 80 hours a week. And, paying a good chunk of what we earn to pay for everybody else. And it wouldn't even be aggravating to be paying for everyone else if, at the very least, we had an honest government or honest men and women in office and an honest monetary system whereby that money was earnestly going to truly help folks and people weren't out gaming the system and so forth. And what we have to remember as we move forward and we get angry with people and we see people and we feel a lot of animosity and anger towards them, that we shouldn't take out our anger on those who've been the beneficiaries of our forced donations, I guess. You know, I'm reading a book and I was explaining last night the Jewish Wars. And it was really incredible to read the accounts. You know, as Titus, the Roman general who was leading the forces against the Jews who were holding up in Jerusalem, and he at every turn offered them a way out. Salvation, if you will. Not salvation for their soul, but physical salvation, where they wouldn't go into captivity as slaves, they would be able to retain their property and their city if they would just stop fighting and you know, acquiesce. And they refused. And at one point, when they broke into the inner city, and they're right at the base of the temple, and the one of the groups of miscreants that were within Jerusalem, they had erected battlements on the steps of the temple courtyard to fight the Romans as they came in. And Titus was so appalled by what he saw, he was heartbroken. And he stood before them, and he told them that they were defiling their own laws. They were defiling their own God. They were defiling themselves in what they were doing. And that he would not touch the temple. And he wanted to give them time to offer the sacrifices that were supposed to have been offered the day before but weren't. He wanted to give leave, take a time out, and let them offer those sacrifices and repent what it was they were doing. And he begged them to stop because he did not want to attack their temple. He did not want to destroy their temple, and he didn't want to see it demolished and burnt to the ground. He had reverence for it. And he was stunned that he, a Roman, was able to show more reverence and more respect for their God and their temple and their laws than they were. And that's where we're at today, I do believe. The majority of people in this country show no respect and pay no homage to our tradition, our law, and our Constitution. And yet, we should not hold them in such contempt that we just don't offer our hand to them anyway. As mad as we can get, we still cannot allow ourselves to get to the point where we don't offer a hand of friendship to them, even now. Miss Linda, I believe that's you. How are you doing?
Fine. How's it going? I'm in the market because I'm on my way to a meeting and listening, of course, to all the stuff you're talking about. And today, earlier, on Glenn, he had Christopher Monckton on, and they were talking about Greece and Europe and what's going on. So they did not mention the dishonest monetary system, but they certainly mentioned, you know, the socialistic views of Europe and, of course, this country. And if we don't change our ways real soon, We're next.
Well, you know, Michael said it last night. I've said it before. Others have said it before us. I'll say it again. I don't think that, well, it's too damn late to change it, okay? It's too damned late to change it and not have such a horrible impact on everyone, not just in this country, but worldwide. Because, let's face it, the majority of the globe is dependent on the teat that's growing out of Washington, D.C.
Right.
You look at the astronomical sums of money that have been squandered or given to hundreds and hundreds of governments around the world, your tax dollars, and part of that $15 trillion-plus deficit,
sure,
or national debt,
right,
right out of your tax dollars and your children and grandchildren's future. You
okay.
know, that's...
For it.
It, look, it's just... That's why I said the other night, welcome to the global plantation, you know, because that's what it is.
Well, it's crazy. And what they were talking about, and they only had about 15 minutes of his normal hour show, and Monckton said that it was going to, when Greece goes, the domino will happen. And he says, it's going to affect the United States. And he says, we will look like Greece, and it will happen really fast.
Well, you remember, you know, Pastor Williams said 3 weeks that when the euro collapses, we've got about 3 weeks here.
Yeah.
You've got bank runs in Spain, bank runs in Greece. You know, Joe, one of the guys that had called in, and I'd love for him to come back. He seemed like a pretty smart guy. You know, he asked the question, how do you figure that, you know, Greece collapsing going to affect the U.S. economy?
Right.
And that's really pretty simple. Number one, the Eurozone accounts for 17% of everything that we ship out to this country, not counting
right.
garbage, because that's our number one export is trash. After that is dollars.
Yes, I know.
You know,
crazy.
I mean, it is. It's insane. But of our productive things, the production that we create, 17% of it goes to the Eurozone. So if you just say, okay, for the sake of argument, we won't say that you're going to have 100% reduction, because those people are still going to at least have subsistence living.
Sure.
They're going to have to figure out a way somehow to import some things. So let's say that our economy takes a 5% hit in its growth rate. Well, we're not in positive growth, even though they want to paint a rosy picture that we are. You know, you take the numbers and jack them around however you want, but, you know, 1.5% is not what I would call positive. And, of course,
sure.
the whole system absolutely relies on expansion. If you're not continually expanding that bubble, you're in trouble. Well, they're pumping like hell. They got all the air pumps running, you know, the money pumps running full time, and we got a meager 1.5% growth. And you take a 5% hit off of that, you're in trouble.
and I mean, you can't have. There's not going to be any growth until this intrinsic socialistic ideology stops in this country. There's no way. And the banksters and the Wall Street, you know, cronies and the socialists and the cabinets of the czars and the stupid president and stuff. You know, that's what I was trying to explain in the chat room to Rod. This mess is so convoluted and the web of deception is so deep and entangled, you know, and so widespread that it's a mess. I don't even, you know, how long it would take to undo what they've done if we could wave a magic wand. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Of course, you've seen the G. Edward Griffin, the creature from Jekyll Island.
Yes.
And he puts it quite beautifully when he talks about the kingdom of Phrygia and the Phrygian king and the Mandrake method. And, you know, for those of us that are old enough, Rod Luke, I know, Rod, I don't want you to show your age, but I know Rod's old enough because I'm old enough and Rod's a little older than I am. And you and Yola probably also remember, and I know my pops remembers, and Michael probably remembers as well, and Doc may as well. The old cartoon strip in the comic strip in the newspaper, Mandrake the Magician.
Right.
Okay, and that's what he's talking about in the Creature from Jekyll Island, the Mandrake method. It's that magic lever that no one can know about. It's the same thing you see depicted in The Wizard of Oz, the wizard behind the curtain, you know, hiding, and he's running the levers. Well, those levers are pulling the strings of all the government cronies that we all get pissed off at.
Exactly. They're the ones, you know, whoever the puller of the strings is the puppet master, and these guys are dancing like little Pinocchios. Daily, and they're stealing everything that they can. They don't care. They want their absolute power, and they've got it. And they are also the ones looking outside from the inside and laughing their asses off at us, the fools. So,
absolutely.
I mean, it's and I again, you know, I mean, in my wildest conservative nightmare or dream, good dream, that Ron Paul could be the one. I mean. And again, it's not just him, but so much has to change. I mean, that Fed's got to go. This foreign entanglements, the UN, the EPA, all of it. I don't know how to do that, but unless we just, of course, would be a great idea to follow the Constitution for a change.
Well, it really would, and I don't know if you get to read that little blog excerpt I put up from Patrick Henry. And he was pissed because he saw the Constitution as an intrusion.
Right.
He absolutely stated without any regret or remorse that the Constitution would lead to exactly what we have. I don't think he quite would have envisioned what we have today, but certainly that it was going to lead into this pit.
Yeah, I mean,
that we're presently
in. I guess a few weeks ago, I mean, you know, we're getting it because we are globally entangled. We're getting it from all angles, as you know. And I said, at least George Washington and his merry band of farmers only had to fight one king. We've got so many, I don't know where to start. It's horrible.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite movies, Mel Gibson and The Patriot, and I know Robert really likes Mel a lot. He's got all of his movies, and I think he's got an autographed picture of him. You know, he says, why should I give up one tyrant 5,000 miles away for 3,000 tyrants 1 mile away?
Oh, yeah.
And he couldn't have been more correct.
Wow.
Patrick Henry was undertaking a speech, and, you know, he was a very good orator. And it says, on day two, Patrick Henry undertook to debunk the manufactured threat of a constitutional crisis by expanding on his theme of the previous day. On Tuesday, June 5th, he was framing the issues for the debate that lay ahead. Ironically, he argued that the greatest constitutional crisis was the threat posed by the proposed change of government under the new Constitution. He first returned again to point out that a government constituted under the authority of we the people was in fact a consolidated national government rather than a confederacy of independent states. This transition was so severe that the addition of a Bill of Rights could never possibly compensate.
Oh.
And he was right.
Yeah, he's probably dead on. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, my gosh.
And that was, quite honestly, what prompted the Bill of Rights, and it was added on as an afterthought. But there was a lot of them at the Constitutional Convention that were absolutely furious because, quite clearly, their mandate was to perfect the Articles of Confederation, because what we had was a confederation of free and independent states. What was created was a national government. And if you've listened through that Spirit of 76, which contains the entire Constitutional Convention, it becomes painfully obvious. And it also becomes painfully obvious who the perpetrators were that were trying to get this pushed through. Madison was one, and Hamilton was up to his neck in it. Madison was smart. Madison was smart. He used Hamilton as his voice. So he would put stuff in writing and give it to Hamilton, and Hamilton would arise. And,
in the Federalist Papers.
Yep. The Federalist Papers, but all during the convention.
Why didn't they just stick with the Declaration of Independence and then just deal with the post office, roads, and the Navy or whatever they needed, and be done, let it just be that?
Well, because what they did, I think, and I have a theory on this, but I could be all wet. But if you go back and read the papers and what was going on at the time, of course, during the Revolutionary War, we know that there was a big problem with supplying the troops with anything and everything. And they couldn't get the states to remit any money for their part. And so they wanted a way that they could force the states to relinquish money. And so they had to have better tax laws or clauses in the Articles of Confederation, and the way that they presumed to do this was to create a national government that would be superior to any of the state governments. And boy, as soon as they used the word national, you know, a bunch of them just went hog wild and said, no. But my theory is that Hamilton, having been involved with the first bank that was actually up in Philadelphia, and his cronies were helping run that bank. You know, there's nothing so lucrative as a government contract. And that holds true today as it was back then.
Oh, sure.
Those government contracts are absolutely gold. And so here these guys were. They were buying. The way it worked is they printed money. They printed bonds. Okay, treasury notes. Treasury bonds on a non-existent treasury of a new government that was very loosely formed. And so they sold those bonds for real gold, and they used that money to then fill contracts through companies that they owned to supply all the necessary materials to the Continental Army.
Okay.
And then at the end of the war, when, you know, they're using paper money, the Continentals, it depended on what state you were in or even what county you were in as to how much one of those Continentals was worth. And so they ended up buying back a lot of those government bonds for pennies on the dollar, and the government had to make good on those bonds in gold and silver.
So this sounds like the first creature fed.
You think? And which is exactly why the very first thing that Mr. Alexander Hamilton did is he ran out and he borrowed $10 million of dollars from the Bank of England, and he opened a bank with his partner, Raymond Burr, the guy that shot him. Yeah.
Yep.
Or Aaron Burr, Raymond Burr. Yeah. Raymond wasn't in his wheelchair yet. Sorry, guys. And I think we've got Mr. Robert on the line. I must have offended him with the Mel Gibson comment. He hung up on us, but he's back.
Do you know why, Ron?
Why is that, sir?
It's because I look like Rocky Balboa in the nursing home right now.
Oh, well, I didn't mean to offend Robert. I was just taking the liberty.
I mean, you know, what am I, chop liver these days?
No, I've been wondering. I thought maybe I offended you the other night when I had to cut you off.
Oh, no, you didn't cut me off. It's just I just never had to retort back. I like that guy, by the way, that was on your show. He was pretty astute.
The guy that was on my show.
The last time when I was on, I mean, I was on to try to, you know, waiting for you to say well, what do you think about that, Robert? But I didn't hear a response from you. He's just like, what am I, a chop lover?
Oh, no, no. I guess you didn't hear me because your phone was creating so much background static. I told you hang by your phone, and I disconnected you, and I tried calling from the studio.
You know what? I think you're right, Ron. I think my phone is tapped.
Well, now tonight it's great. It's absolutely.
Yeah, I know. Perfect.
I think they moved on to Michael Magic because he called in the other night, and his phone was terrible. And I actually thought it may have been Linda's, but when Michael cut out, then it was fine.
Go ahead, Linda.
Oh, I was just going to say that it couldn't have been mine. They don't have any red dots on my mailbox yet.
Oh, God. Red dots. Well, you know, I was listening to you about Greece, right?
Yep.
So our anointed one confirmed it today on Fox. He says in 3 weeks, Greece is ready to go under. We're going to have to deal with that. So,
well, you know, I saw the report, and it's just one of those things that it makes you just want to go slap somebody. Where they were showing Obama and Karzai, and said Karzai thanks Obama for the billions in taxpayer money, and I'm like, you.
I felt the same way. I felt nauseated after he said that. You know, it's just like. So what do we do, Ron? I mean, do we take our money out 3 weeks or what?
You know, I don't know. Fortunately, I don't have enough money in there to worry about it one way or the other. But I would say since silver is trying to go on the skids here lately, it's down around $28 an ounce, I would definitely advise
that
if you can afford it, buy some silver, guys. I'm telling you, it's not going to be in the basement forever. And boy, J.P. Morgan and their little troubles that they're having. Of course, they're way short on silver. J.P. Morgan holds the largest short positions in the market on silver, and I don't know who they're doing that for, but they're largely responsible for the manipulation of the silver market.
Unbelievable.
I mean, this is just like. Another reason why I haven't been around is because I have issues with my home, and I'm trying to get contractors to fix my garage because all my wood of the siding has rotted into the garage.
Oh.
and if I don't put a hardy board on it, it's gonna be I'm gonna have the same problems all over again. So. I've been dealing with a lot of stuff here, and it's going to be a tough job to do. And plus, I had my first week of class, and that's why I haven't been around. It's been busy with my home and school. So,
well, see, what you need to do is invite Hollis to come down to go fishing. See,
well, that can be arranged.
Because for one, Hollis has a pretty doggone nice fishing boat, and he's also a excellent carpenter.
Is he really?
Yeah,
well,
he was a builder. So,
yeah,
I mean,
but,
you
see,
know,
I
you
can't.
Kind of...
I know, but Ron is just I can't do the wood again because if I do the wood, it's going to rot again. So I might as well just submit it and get it over with. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to have the same turmoil.
Right.
Well, twice.
Well,
they
do make some composite materials now that aren't wood that won't rot.
Right, that's what they say, you know. But I mean, holes are coming through my garage now. See, I mean, you can see the sunlight coming in through the garage.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. And my house is just falling apart.
Well, then you can spy on your neighbors from inside the garage. You can be like Gladys Kravitz, you know.
I don't have to spy on them. They spy on me.
Oh, God.
It's the truth, Linda. Everybody looks at everybody's window out here. I mean, But he was wondering, is a little you-know-what home or not? You know?
Oh, yeah. I know the feeling. We live in a fishbowl because we're in a double-wide mobile home in the park. So, I mean, we can see all and hear all pretty much.
I don't know how you put up with that. You're governor, man. I swear to God. I mean,
I know he's horrible. I mean, it's getting worse. I actually sent a pretty terse letter to these people because I was a couple weeks ago went down to a friend of mine's. Her son passed away unexpectedly, and we went to a memorial service. And here I am, and I'm getting ready to come back home. And I probably took the wrong turn instead of going straight to another freeway. I got on 125 or whatever. And it's a toll road, and I couldn't back out of it. So I got hit with some stupid fine. You know, I was in the wrong lane, and anyway, it was horrible. So I told them, I said, congratulations. I said, here's your blood money, you rat. And then I told them, I said, as soon as I can get out of this state, I'm going to. And that... You know, I said, congratulations, we're at the bottom of the list for the, you know, most desirable places to live in the whole United States, where we used to be number one, and it only took them about 45 years to screw that over. So I was pretty PO'd.
I mean, my God, I tell you, I don't, just watching the the format of Romney versus Obama is enough to make you,
vomit.
It's craziness. They have the kids on the bloggers have a new word for Romney. They call him mittens.
it's gonna be a contest of who can lie the best, and who can pretend he's not the most progressive.
Yep, exactly.
And people will eat it up.
I know. It's a horrible circus. Mm. It's more like the only clowns involved is Emmett Kelly, the crying one, because we're crying. Awful. It's the truth.
And Robert's going to be down in your neck of the woods on – So I'm going to be down in your neck of the woods probably Saturday night.
Are you really?
Yep.
Oh, you better say hello to me.
Well, you know I will. We're going to be in Cape Coral, so we
just
might
on
have
the
to.
Way.
Yeah, we might have to meet up somewhere and have a cold beer.
Absolutely. I mean, my friend Leonie. I mean, her friend works. Lives at the same place where Frank is.
Really?
She lives. Yeah, she lives in Sarasota. She goes. I said to her, "Do you know Frank Winkles?" And she goes, "Yes, I know Frank. How do you know Frank?" And I told her, you know, I met him at the barber dinner, and I was inviting, you know, he invited me on the show to speak and everything, and she goes, "I said for her to tell Frank." For everybody to say hello for the radio show to him, so he's right across from Sarasota Memorial Hospital, Sarasota Healthcare.
Wow,
that's where he is. So, have you heard from Frank or Ron?
I have not.
You have
not. I don't
think
any of us have. No.
Nope. I tried. Go ahead.
He's still alive and kicking, so he's there. So maybe we should go see him Saturday.
Well, I'm not probably going to be in that part of town until, I don't know, 9 or 10 o'clock at night. So I doubt I'll be able to go in and visit him at that time. But
maybe we could do a Sunday or something, the 29th.
I'll have to see. I'm kind of course, you know how that is. I'll have my wife and my son and his wife and the grandbaby. Mm. So I kind of have to toe the line and do whatever they want to do. But either, you know, one day during the week or maybe out on our way back, we can stop one way or the other. We'll get together and have a cold beer. That's for sure.
Absolutely. So, but I don't know if I can come to the reunion Indiana because of this whole ordeal, because of financial stuff that I don't know how much it's going to cost me. And because of that, I don't know if I can make it. So please forgive me that I can't make it to Indiana. Plus the fact it's weekend, it's final exam week that week, and I won't be able to make it. So you'll have to forgive me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we heard that.
I don't know if I can forgive you, Robert.
Forgive me, because it's a tough trip. We were going to drive up there. You know, we were going to drive up there and follow you guys up to Indiana. But when I got my schedule, of course, I just got through with the conference. I'm on call that week, so I can't go. I can't make it. That's the way it is. And I apologize for that.
It won't be the same without you, but we'll have to.
I'll be there, but I'll be there in spirit for sure.
Oh yeah.
Let me ask you this: are you gonna have any radio shows on that weekend?
Doubt it.
I don't know.
Because,
you know,
I think you guys are just gonna get there. You're gonna go to Indiana, and you're gonna sit around a campfire, and you guys are just gonna get sugared.
That's certainly a possibility, but I think if nothing else, I'm gonna try and get some video and maybe put together a little bit of a video. And I don't know, we might do a show Sunday night. It just depends on what's happening, you know?
So, all we need is a decent computer and a Skype connection or whatever, right?
Yeah, you don't even need that. All you need is an iPhone, and you're in.
Cool.
You're in with an iPhone?
Yep.
Really? For Blog Talk Radio, you can use an iPhone and that's it?
Well, you have internet access. You know, as long as you've got a signal,
right?
And you know, as long as you can get a signal, you can go on to Blog Talk and you can do a whole show right there from a cell phone.
Awesome!
Wow.
Might make the chat room a little challenging, but you know, I can actually sync the iPhone to the iPad and use the iPad to chat.
Wow!
So, it is definitely possible.
I like that story about Hamilton and Raymond Burr. How he borrowed
Aaron. You see him in the wheelchair, you know.
I like that story.
I don't think he came out of the closet either.
That's why they got to fight and killed each other. I knew they got to fight. Raymond Burr killed Alexander Hamilton, but I never knew the real story. Why?
Well, it was actually Aaron Burr.
I mean Aaron Burr.
Right. I said Raymond Burr, you know, that Ironsides. You see him rolling in the courtroom in his wheelchair.
Okay, guys. I'm going to thank you so much for letting me hang out. I'm going to go into this meeting. We're talking about a whole bunch of stuff tonight on what went on in Sacramento. One of our gentlemen went up there. It has to do with Agenda 21 and cap and trade and, you know, all that stuff. So it's going to be pretty interesting to report on, you know, one or several of the shows. And so I'll take notes.
Give a bell, Linda. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's fine. Thank you, guys, and God bless, God bless our Patriot family.
Same here. God bless you, Linda.
Okay, good night, guys. Have fun.
See you, hon. Thanks for calling.
Bye. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, you know, Doc was asking something about getting chat on the iPad. On the new generation you can, and I think you can sync the phone. So you can use the phone as the microphone and to do calls for the studio. And I think you can sync to the iPad, whatever the new generation is, 2, 4, whatever it is.
Right.
And it has a pop-up keyboard that comes on screen, so you could do the chat.
That's amazing. I mean, that's amazing. I didn't know you could do that.
I'll tell you, when my wife first got her iPad, I was rolling my eyes. And then when she got a new one, the next generation that came out, and she asked me if I wanted her old one, and I said, yeah, I don't know what the heck I'd ever use it for. But I didn't want to see her just throw it away or give it away to somebody on eBay. So I took it, and I got to tell you, I love it.
No, and now, Ron, they have this new thing called, out. It's like a small notepad, it's like an iPad, but it's like a notepad with a miniature computer. Everything. It's unbelievable. You can get it on the internet. You can do whatever you want. It's unbelievable.
I can get online and I can do a lot of stuff. The problem with the iPad is the first version is that you can't watch a lot of videos and stuff because, as Doc correctly pointed out, there's no Flash player on the original iPad. So, any video that requires a Flash player, you can't play. A lot of the stuff that I like to read, I've gotten for free on Kindle or Amazon.com. Because evidently nobody else wants to read it, so they just give it away.
Wow!
And I was really hoping that I got the Legends of the Jews volumes 1 through 4, and I'm hoping that I find you in there.
I hope you do because I went into that video that says, if you're a Christian, you should watch this. So I thought to myself, well, I'm not a Christian, so does that mean I'm allowed?
Well, I hope you watched that, and I hope you got a little stuff from it.
That was a little joke. Are you there?
Oh, I'm here.
That was just a little joke. But, I watched a little bit of it, and I can relate to that. I can literally relate to that, Ron, and I tell you why. When I was having diverticulitis, I found what was it? when I told you when I was to get my hip re-freedom evaluated.
Uh huh.
Well, I the reason why my hip swells so much is because I have a pinched nerve right underneath my psoas iliac muscle around the iliac bone, and that's what was giving me the pain. So I was having, diverticulitis at the same time. This was 2 years ago. And I had to be admitted to the hospital. And you know what, Ron? I can relate because I said, Lord Jesus, whoever you are, if you're going to save me, save me. But if you want to take me, go ahead. I don't care. I was at that point. And my doctor said, how could you have that? He says, you could almost died. I said, believe me. I thought I was. I thought 2 years ago, I thought I was dying. I really did. I thought I was dying. And now, my new orthopedic man says, you can start running your marathons. You can start riding your bike. You can do whatever you want to go for.
Awesome, man. I'm glad that you're doing well.
I mean, a pinched nerve that can really make you almost a cripple. I left that hospital. I left my dad's hospital in a back brace and a cane. They didn't diagnose me 2 years ago. Unbelievable. So the moral of the story is, the moral of the story is, it's not over till it's over.
This is absolutely true.
And I think that goes through everything else in life. It's not over till it's over. And government cannot control. Government cannot control. Well, I don't know if I should say that, because one of the reasons why I was on the show. It was John. I don't know if you saw John Stossel this weekend or not.
No, I don't watch. If I watch television, it's a very rare occasion.
I hardly ever watch it either, but this weekend I happened to turn it on. And this is what really bothers me now. So John Stossel was talking about racism and how bad it is and all that bad things about racism. And he says people shouldn't condone racism, but this is what got him in trouble, Mr. Bud. He says, but racists have the right to their freedom of speech, right?
Right.
Period, close quote. Well, supposedly everybody's asking for John Stossel to be fired from Fox News because he said that. Now, isn't that something?
It doesn't surprise me. You know, he got ran out of, what was it, CBS or NBC, ABC, I don't remember which network he was on previously. Stossel's one of those guys, you know, that he tells it the way he sees it, and, you know, a lot of people don't like it, and that's just too damn bad. But, you know, he's very pragmatic in his approach, that, and he's absolutely right about 90% of the time.
And so, therefore, I guess I am hung up.
You're here. You're on.
Oh, but I am.
We got about 8 minutes left. You're still here.
No. So I just feel. I mean, here's a guy that reports is pretty fair, balanced. I believe, and now people are hating him because he made that comment. So Who are the true racists? I want to know.
Well, you know, and that's what I, at the top of the show, I don't know if you were listening, but, you know, there's Mesquite, Texas, and I've been to Mesquite, Texas, by the way, and it's not much to talk about, but they've got all their panties in a wad online because their yearbook stated that some of the special needs children were mentally retarded.
And some
of the special needs children that were photographed in the yearbook were mentally retarded. And
right.
So they've got all their panties in a wad. But the truth of the matter is that some of those children do suffer from a retarding of their mental development. That's mental retardation. Get over it.
Right.
It's not a bad word. You know? It's all this PC crap.
Well, that's true too. But didn't there was a story that, you know, there was a story on the news where I saw where this teacher was just ridiculing this special needs kid and basically said, "What are you, mentally retarded? I mean, you know, where do you draw the line?"
Well, clearly the teacher was. You know, I remember telling an off-color joke one time about a little boy that was mentally retarded, and it was his first year going to school, and every day his mom would get him ready, and she took him down to the bus stop and said, "Now remember, when the bus driver opens the door, you just ask him, 'Is this the school bus?' And, you know, he'll let you on and take you to school." So the first day he comes running back home all beat to hell, his little lunchbox all dented up, and his mother asked him, you know, what was wrong, and he told her, you know, the school bus driver beat me up. Well, she couldn't believe that. That was just ridiculous. So the next day she got him ready to go again, and he really didn't want to go. He fought tooth and nail just going out the door. She got him down to the bus stop, and she went back home, and he came back about 30 minutes later all beat to hell. And so she said, you know, what happened? He said, the bus driver beat me up. And she said, well, this is ridiculous, you know, but she knew her son wasn't a liar. And so she thought, well, maybe there's something to this. So she talked to the police, and they said, well, we'll check it out. So the police sat across the street, you know, and hiding and waited. The next day, you know, she really had to fight like hell to get him out the door, but he went duly like he should and got him to the bus stop. So she went home, and pretty soon the bus pulled up, the doors opened, and the next thing you know, the bus driver comes flying out of the bus, and he's just beating the snot out of this little kid, and the cops come up, and they grab the guy, and they say, "Hey, buddy, what the hell is wrong with you?" And the bus driver looks at him and says, "He ain't making fun of me."
That's pretty bad.
I told that joke, and it was at a new job, and you know, everybody kind of laughed, and then after it all kind of dispersed, you know, one of the guys grabbed me and said, "Hey, you know the boss's daughter is mentally retarded," and I'm like,
"Oh no!"
Yeah, I felt about an inch big, you know.
Oh no! That's bad. That's really bad. Oh, I bet you feel like you crawling into a hole and saying sayonara.
And you know, it's one of those things. You know, we should. I don't think we should refrain from laughing at things that are funny, or avoiding touchy subjects. And, you know,
right.
Growing up, I had an aunt, my Aunt Ruthie, and her entire life, she was 6 years old.
Right.
She had gotten pneumonia when she was 5 or 6 and got such a high fever. And, of course, back then, they didn't have a lot of treatments that they have available now. And she got a super high fever, and it caused brain damage, and she just...
Hello?
She was the sweetest person in the world. And it wasn't until I got older that, you know, I started looking and thinking about things. And we have a local church here, and there was a little girl that was developmentally disabled, I guess is the PC word. And she was the most loving, caring little girl you'd ever want to meet. And I got talking with a friend of mine about it, and I said, you know, we can joke and laugh and make light of things, but I
right.
think we need to stop and recognize that those people that have that condition, they're not handicapped.
No, they're not. They're not.
They have got the best deal out of all of us. Imagine
exactly.
going through your entire life being 6 years old.
Yeah,
that wouldn't be such a terrible thing. And, you know, you'd never have the burden of responsibilities. And so I think, you know, if we looked at it, like number one, I think they're a blessing. And they're a blessing to everyone around them. You know,
yeah,
sometimes they can... Certainly, they can be a burden on their parents at times. You know, I'm sure of that. But we all can.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, the cerebral palsy case I'm working on. I mean, this girl is just like she's in a wheelchair 24/7, right? So it's just like, you know, she sometimes they come over to visit me and spend the night because, you know, they was I'm observing her behavior so she could go out and travel. So, when she can, she's fun to be. She likes to party just as much as we do. So every time I wake up in the morning, I look at her and she smiles at me and I say to her, Ron, I say, "How many people are you gonna mess up today?" And when I say that to her, Ron, she just starts laughing.
Well, I mean, you know.
She just thinks it's funny when I ask her that question. I said, "How many people are you gonna mess up today?" You know, she just thinks it's so funny every time.
You know, sometimes I think we just look at other people like that, and we don't really see them as human, and we just kind of pity them. And I've got a guy that comes in my store, and not anymore. He goes to our new store because it's closer to him, but he's deaf, and just the sweetest man. World and so funny, And I was joshing with him one day, and I kind of doing a half-ass sign language with him. He can read lips, and I asked him. I said, "You know why blind people don't go skydiving?" And he shook his head, and I said, "It scares the shit out of the dog."
Oh God!
He thought that was hilarious. He thought that was absolutely hilarious.
That's
but you
funny.
Know. It's one of those things that I would never have said that if I had just met him or hadn't known him for a while and he understood, he knows who I am, you know what I mean?
Right.
So he knew I wasn't just like taking a stab in the dark at people that are handicapped or disabled or whatever you want to call it.
But anyhow... I mean, it's sad. It's sad watching this girl. Is 24/7 in a wheelchair? You know, but it's the way it is. That's I sometimes feel we're dealt a hand and we gotta play the cards right. So whatever the hand is, you have to play the cards. You know?
Yep. So, I mean, you got to deal with what you're dealt. You're absolutely right. And. You know, forgive me for this, but in light of the conversation, I have to ask. Your new girlfriend, she's not in a wheelchair, is she?
No.
I'm sorry. Maybe that might have been a motivation for going into that field of study. I'm just...
you're about as bad as my financial advisor.
Yeah, you get the ones that can't get away, you know. I know that.
It's just like you're right. You gotta hire a lawyer and an accountant these days to take care of your finances. You're right. You have to now.
Oh yeah, and I've got one that's not worth a crap. I'm getting ready to fire him.
Well, I'm going through the same thing.
I call her up, I leave her voicemails, and I don't get return phone calls, I get emails. And then in the email she says, "Well, I'll be there between 5 and 6, and 6:30 rolls around and no email and no phone call and no accountant. And I'm like, "What, don't worry about me. They only gave me 30 days to respond to this last notice, so take your time. It's okay."
Oh my God.
It is what it is,
Ron. I'm beginning to think we're owed by the banks and the government. They owe us, The banks owe us. I mean, Wells Fargo Bank is doing now. Even though you're using your debit, I know why you don't use your debit card. Even though you use your debit card and the cash comes out immediately once you use it, even if you write it down on your ledger, what they do is they go against your ledger and take less money out. They're stealing money out of your checking account.
Oh yeah, the whole reason that Wells Fargo wanted Wachovia, I think the only reason they bought out Wachovia was
right.
Because Wachovia had something that Wells Fargo coveted. Do you know what that was?
That was my next question. What was that?
What Wachovia was in possession of was bank charter number 1. The very first charter of Congress for a national bank.
Uh-huh. Ain't that something?
Yeah, and Wachovia was not the bank that was the first bank chartered. By the newly formed Congress, not the first national bank that was chartered. I forget who it was now. Wachovia ended up buying them out, and so they came in possession of bank charter number 1. Wells Fargo, I believe, was bank charter number 3, and they wanted title to number 1, and they got it.
So that's why they refer everything to checks and balances.
Well, I'll tell you.
Oh, my God.
It's, you know, it's a comedy. It's a tragic comedy, I should say.
Oh, God. So I figured it out then. I finally figured that one out. Right?
There you go.
So I went to the bank Friday. So now every week now, even when you take the $300 out of cash, they still go against your balance. And they smile at you. They think it's funny. They know that they're still ripping you off.
Oh, yeah.
They just think it's wonderful. They just laugh at you and smile. You think you're really getting $300 in your pocket?
And, you know, those are just demand deposits. That's just, you know, that's like playing Monopoly and being the banker, you know?
That's unbelievable, man. I mean, I say this every month, but the month of March and April and the beginning of May has just been horrendous. And I'm not spending extravagantly. I'm just buying basic necessities for that, you know, for what I need. It just seems like it's just been doubling each month. So I hear on the news today, we're in hyperinflation, and not only we're in hyperinflation, we're in stagnation. We're the same way when Ronald Reagan was in office, his second inaugural address.
Well, you know what the economists would probably tell you, at least the Keynesian economists, what they would probably tell you is actually the period that we're in is a deflationary stagnation of hyperinflation.
Right. But it's confirmed now. It's just hyperinflation plus stagnation. So,
it's called stagflation.
But the only problem is we're not at 17% interest rate. That's the only problem. So
cure that soon enough.
Huh?
They'll cure that soon enough.
You think so? You think they'll raise interest rate pretty soon?
I don't know. It's certainly possible, especially if we see, you know, oil prices continue to decline, which of course today, my store manager came running out to the shop and he said, okay, so the lady on the news up front just said that the reason oil prices are going down is because Europe is in such a slump. And I said, well, that's a good fairy tale. And I guess you could make a roundabout connection of those dots, but Europe gets their oil, on a completely different market, a completely different type of oil. Most of Europe's oil comes from the ICE, which is the International Continental Exchange, and not through the NYMEX. And they use Brent crude, and we use a different crude. So, you know, Brent light sweet crude is trading at $110, $112, $115 a barrel versus, you know, the crude oil that the U.S. uses at $92 a barrel. So I guess you could make an argument that because the euro is weaker against the dollar and the dollar is going up, that's why oil prices here in the U.S. are going down.
Right.
But don't believe it for a minute, and I'll tell you why. Because they're closing 4 refineries here in the United States, and what they cite as motivation for closing them is super tough regulations, number one. Number two, a drop in demand. You know, and when you have a supply and demand economy, less demand means less supply, lower supply. Lower supply means less profits. And,
right.
You know, a lot of those refineries, I fully understand that if they're running at 98% capacity, they're turning a profit. If they're running at 60% capacity, they're losing money. And so that was one of the reasons why they gave for the gas prices remaining high, even though the oil prices per barrel has gone down. Because
right.
in order for them to maintain profitability at a lower output, they have to have more money for, you know, for the process to maintain profitability. Otherwise, they start going into the red. They're going to have to start laying off employees. Once you start laying people off, you lose your ability to create more supply. And so there's always going to be that lag time when you go to, you know, if things ever pick up again. But I think you're going to see, you know, they want gasoline at $7 a gallon.
Oh, I know that. I know that. And when you see that, that's forever, basically, right?
Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's going to be a whole long time from now, quite honestly. I mean, right now, you know, I'm sitting here looking at the markets, and there's a little bit of volume, and the dollar's up, but not a lot. You know, it was at 81 basis points the other day when it closed, and today it closed at 80.98, so it's up 0.2 of a point. We were down against the euro earlier in the day. Now we're up against the euro. We have not hit parity with the euro, and that ought to tell people something. You know, the eurozone is deep crap, and they know it.
I know.
And still, the euro is worth more than a dollar on the open market.
Wow!
You go to the eurozone, and you know a dollar is worth 78 cents in the eurozone.
Yeah, it's good. I think we're gonna be the dying breed.
Now I'll tell you the one that I find interesting, and that is the British pound. I used to follow the currency markets pretty closely. A smart play, you know, a couple of years ago, or even a year ago, would have been to put as much money as you could possibly bear into shorting euro against the dollar. Go long on the dollar, short on the euro. At that time, the U.S. dollar in the eurozone was worth 65 cents.
Right.
It's now 78 cents. And
right.
When you look at the currency markets, when you're talking about a currency, they trade, you earn money 5 places behind the decimal.
That's what I mean. It's just like fake decimals and
well, it's not fake decimals. What do is there? You're talking about, you know, when you're trading in currency, you're leveraging, okay? You're doing a 10-to-1 kind of thing, okay? That's why the currency, the Forex, is so attractive, because it allows the average Joe to get in and play the banker's game on a very small scale.
Right.
Okay, so you put, you know, $10,000 in an account, you can purchase up to $90,000 worth of transaction. Now, the danger in that, you know, you only have a certain margin, and that margin's going to be, you know, 10%. So
right.
if you're risking $90,000 worth of currency, that's not all your money. That's someone else's money you're leveraging. So
right.
if your position drops 1 percentage point, you're done. They take your $10,000 and you lose. And the reason for that is because they're not going to allow you to lose their $90,000 or their $80,000.
Right.
They'll let you lose your $10,000, but they're not going to let you lose their money. So they go, you know, five places behind the decimal on the euro, on a euro trade. The only one of the few that doesn't go five places behind the decimal is the yen to the dollar. They only go three places behind the decimal.
Right.
But see, when you go to trade a block of currency, the minimum amount of currency that you can buy is 10,000 units.
Huh?
Okay, if it's a dollar a piece and all you've got in your account is $10,000, you can't play the game without leverage. So you leverage.
Wow.
You know, you leverage. That's your margin. Your margin in the account. You know, you can leverage up to 9 times what you have in there, and that's your 10% is your margin. So if you're smart, you do half, you know, $5,000, or you'll do $1,000 so that you have a huge margin, a big cushion, so you can get a lot of movement up and down. So if you got a $10,000 account, you bet $1,000 and you go long. Now you can get a lot of movement. But if hypothetically, if you're, let's say you're doing a single trade of $1,000, okay, and you got 10,000 units of currency, you're risking $1,000.
Right.
Each time the fifth digit behind the decimal goes up 1 point, your risk goes down by $10. So now you're only risking $900 if it goes up 1 point. If the next number, the fourth number behind the decimal, goes up 1 point, your risk goes down by $100. If the third number behind the decimal goes up 1 point, your risk goes down by $1,000. Now you're at break even, except for the spread, whatever the spread is between the bid and the ask. So, you know, $1,000 every time that third number behind the decimal goes up 1 point, and you go from 65 to 78, you just hit the jackpot, dude.
Yeah. It's just, you know what it reminds me of? It's like being a bookie.
Let me tell you, it takes a lot more nerve than being a bookie, because at some point, I mean, you know, you have to have a life outside of sitting there staring at your computer screen watching the numbers move around. And
you have to
just trust in your abilities to you know, gauge the market and hope and pray that, you know, you've done the right thing. And, the reason these big boys can, I mean, they can play with a large amount of money, they can leverage, get a much better margin, you know, they can do a 1% margin, and they can just ride it out until the market turns in their favor. And that's what J.P. Morgan has done with silver, is they're shorting a physical commodity in silver, but they have such vast resources that they can go in and manipulate the price of the commodity downward in their favor.
So how much would $1,000 in cold cash buy you silver?
Well, right now silver's at $28.54, and you'll pay a slight premium. So, you know, you got $1,000 divided by 29.54. It's going to buy you almost 34 ounces.
34 ounces, so that's a good start.
1 ounce is a good start, you know?
1 ounce is a good start.
Yeah, but you got to find somebody. You got to find someone that you can trust and that'll give you a good deal. You know, I worked with a couple of different places. One guy was charging me 50 cents. Over spot, which was great, you know, so I'd be paying $29.04 for silver from him, and that was awesome. And then when I left that place and I wasn't over at his door every 2 weeks. I went back over there and he wanted to charge me, you know, $1.50 over spot, and I told him to go pound sand. And
right.
I've got a guy here local that'll charge me, you know, like 90 cents over spot. But when I go to trade the other way, when I go to sell him silver, he pays me 10 cents below spot.
Now, why would you want to sell the silver after you bought it?
Well, you really don't. I mean, I sold some because I needed money to put up a deck around my swimming pool. So
I got you.
What's that?
So the silver. So if you buy silver, if you buy 1 ounce, 2 ounce, if you buy 10 ounces to start, 20 ounces to start, that can help you fix your home, most likely, right?
Well, you can. What you have to understand, and I've got a friend of mine that deals in silver now, and he, it took him a long time to figure this out. And the problem that most people run into when they go to buy silver, gold, any kind of commodity like that, all they're looking at is what it's worth in dollars.
Right.
Okay, but the value in dollars fluctuates. And the reason
right.
it fluctuates is vast and complicated. But if I bought silver today at $28.54 an ounce, and 5 years from now silver was at $5.58 an ounce, most people would say, well, you know, gee, I'm going to lose my butt if I sell my silver. That's not true. And the reason it's not true is because the $5.58 an ounce that you get that day is more valuable than the $28.54 you paid 5 years ago.
So the value of an ounce is worth more than a dollar.
It's a way of storing value. Okay.
Okay. That's what I was trying to say.
Right. So, but people get hung up on the numbers. You know, $20 an ounce, and now I'm selling it for $5 an ounce. Or, you know, somebody that may have bought quite a while ago and they bought for $5 an ounce, and they're all giddy that they're going to sell it for $28 an ounce. Well,
right.
what did you gain by that? Well, you didn't gain anything. I mean, it looks like you did. It looks like you gained dollars. But the problem with that is the dollars you gained are equal in value to the ones you spent when you started. See?
So $300 a month would probably buy you how much?
Well, I'll tell you what I would do, and I'll give you the guy. There's a guy's name. He's online, and he can set you up with a purchase account. Okay, and his name
right.
is Frank. His name is Franklin Sanders. They call
okay.
him. His nickname is the Money Changer.
The Money Changer.
Yeah, I don't think he's Jewish though.
That
was a temple
fetish.
Joke. That was a temple joke.
I think you have a fetish of becoming a Jew.
No, that was a temple joke. The Money Changers, you know.
I know. I'm only playing with you.
You're the only Jewish friend I have, so I have to take every opportunity to razz you about that. So.
Believe me, I've been called worse, man.
But Franklin Sanders, the Money Changer, you can find his website online. You can call him up, and what he'll do is he's got like a monthly purchase program, and
yes.
you tell him what you want, and tell him, well, you know, I want to start buying silver, and you know, I got about $300 a month that I can spend. And what he does is he has lots of people send him money to buy silver. So
right.
he pools their money to buy larger quantities so he gets a better price.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sends you your silver. Now, what he'll do when you first start doing business with him is that he requires you send him certified funds. And I don't blame him.
Like,
you know, he doesn't know you're from out of town yet.
Like a cashier's check.
Right, like a certified bank check, okay? Once you've established a relationship with the man, he'll take a personal check until you bounce one. Once you bounce one, you're done. But, I mean, that's understandable.
Yeah.
You know, because then you're putting his butt out in the wind for whatever, you know, making good on it. Because he's already out of pocket for it. But, you know, really nice guy. He's got a great website. And he got into this back in the 60s when he got out of the military in the late 60s. And he was actually raided by the IRS and all kinds of stuff. And he won a big court battle against them because he said, no, you know, he hadn't been paying taxes or reporting any income. And he said, well, I don't have any. He said, all I'm doing is exchanging money.
Well,
he said, it's no different than going into the bank with a $20 bill and asking for two tens.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
And the jury agreed with him.
Wow.
All he's doing is trading legal tender for legal tender.
Right. Apples and oranges.
He said, I'm not the one that sets the exchange rate, so how is it I'm making a profit here? You know?
So that's the deal. So you use this guy exclusively and you trust him.
I have not used him. I have talked to him. But I know, I mean, you know, I know who he is, I know his reputation, and you know, short of trying to establish something with somebody down there in Florida that, you know, you don't know them either. And it's difficult to know who you can trust. And any of these guys that you're going to find local down there, they're going to want a premium, you know, which is usually going to be a dollar or two over spot price. And you can tell him what kind of silver you want to buy, whether you want to buy junk silver or you want to buy, you know, bullion or what it is you want to purchase. Junk silver is usually the best deal. They call it junk silver because it's not 100% pure. What it is old U.S. coins, 1964
right.
and earlier, and it's 90% silver. And
right.
a lot of guys shy away from it because they don't know how to subtract 10% to get the actual, you know, pure silver content.
Right.
I don't know why, because that's pretty simple math. It's pretty straightforward, you know. If you got 1,000 ounces of junk silver, you've got 900 ounces of pure silver. It's pretty straight up.
Jeez, if you could buy 1,000, might do it by 0.10. Call it the day, right?
Right. You know, but I really think if I had it all to do over again, that's what I would have done, is I would have went with Franklin. And one of the reasons I would not have done that, I think, is because of the, you know, it leaves a paper trail. You're sending checks instead of walking in somewhere and buying cash.
Right. I mean, I just, you know, I'm trying to find a better avenue right now than my stupid annuities that I have, you know. And I'm just, I don't know what to do anymore. I don't know if they're safe or not either, you know. I don't.
See, originally I wanted to find someone to play the game of arbitrage with me, but I couldn't find anybody that was willing to do it. And
what's arbitrage?
Arbitrage is where, okay, say I've got 100 ounces of gold, okay?
Right.
And right now the gold silver ratio is 56 to 1. So 56 ounces of silver equals 1 ounce of gold. So let's say the ratio goes 60 to 1.
Uh-huh.
So at 60 to 1, I take all my 100 ounces of gold, and I go down and I trade them in for silver. So I just want to, you know, I want to trade you my gold for some silver. And, you know,
right.
the current ratio is 60 to 1. I'd be willing to take 58 to 1. So, okay, so you got 100 ounces times 58. Now I have 5,800 ounces of silver. Okay, well, it's a little bit less value than my gold was. But right. I'm a pretty shrewd guy, and I think that silver is going to go up in value. And sure enough, a month or two goes by, and wouldn't you know it, the ratio is now 25 to 1. Well, I head back up to see my buddy, and I say, hey, you know, I got 5,800 ounces of silver here. I'd like to swap for some gold. Now, I know the ratio is 25 to 1. How about this? How about we do 23 to 1? He said, okay, so 5,800 ounces divided by 27, and now I have 214 ounces of gold, almost 215, but I didn't spend any money.
Wow. So you're looking for silver.
Right, and then as the ratio goes back the other way, now I've got 215 ounces of gold. I originally started with 100. I haven't spent a penny other than the gas to drive back and forth. I lost a little bit in the transition, you know. I had to give a little to take a little. And then, you know, the ratio goes back the other way, and it gets up to 56 to 1 again. And I say, you know, I think silver's fixing to make another run. I got 215 ounces of gold. Would you do me a trade on silver at 54? And he said, okay, times 54, and now I've got 11,600 ounces of silver.
So you just want to trade with somebody.
Right.
Well, how come you haven't used this freight guy?
Because he'll do arbitrage. I mean, he certainly will. But by the time you ship it and everything else, it's just a big damn hassle.
Yeah.
You know, you got to, because you're going to want to insure it. If you're shipping 200 ounces of gold through the anything, FedEx, UPS, the mail, whatever, you're going to want to heavily insure it. And by the time you, at the end of the day, you know, it's really eating into your profits.
That's why you want to, like, I got you.
Right, you want to, you know, if you're going to do something like that, you want to find somebody local. And I do know a guy that'll do that for me, but I just haven't seen enough move in the market, and I'm kind of on the wrong end. At one point, the gold-silver ratio got to 28 ounces of silver for every ounce of gold, and I thought about doing it then, but I held out because I thought, nah, it's going to go to 26. And I waited too long. And now it's at 55, 56, 55.99. You know, when I started, it was at 61.1.
Gotcha.
Silver was dirt cheap. I was buying silver for 10 and 11 bucks an ounce.
Wow. That's truly amazing. Are you in the archives now?
Oh, we've been in the archives.
Oh, wow. I tell you, man. I just don't know what. I mean, you know, I'm worried about, you know, these next six months. You know, it's just, what are you gonna do with your money?
Well,
you know.
You know what? You go back to that, Robert. I'll tell you what. You go back to Scripture, okay? Go back to the Bible, and you can read the prophecies in the Bible, where it tells you that your money is going to fail you.
Well, that's the truth. It already has failed me. So,
it's failed several times before.
You know, it's already failed me. And my money's already failed me. You know,
and it's failing us now. And I think there's an abject lesson in that, you know, don't put your faith in the money. Don't even put your faith in gold and silver.
But, you know, Ron, if I lose you, it's because I got an incoming phone call. But if you want to,
okay.
hang on, hold on.
Sure.
could I beg you for a couple of dollars for tomorrow so we can get a coffee and some lunch? Holy shit.